It's time now for the Sports Objective Podcast. No talking heads, just guys who love sports. Here's Dave Richmond.
Welcome into the Sports Objective Podcast. We want to wish everybody, I guess it's a happy Memorial Day. Kyle from Grange Barber, what's up, man?
How much, Dave? How you doing?
Good. I'm just going to keep my fingers crossed that you're going to run for mayor in LaGrange. I'll be glad to be your campaign manager here pretty soon.
Okay.
What do you think?
Okay. I haven't given it much thought, but now I will.
Okay. All right. And just entertain that thought. And Bubba Rosenbaum, won't you support Kyle from LaGrange?
Of course.
We'll vote for you early and often, Kyle. I promise.
I'm almost positive you wouldn't be allowed to vote.
Well, Bubba and I will get a apartment that we can in the area so we can vote for you, and then we'll just have a 30-day lease.
Well, LaGrange is a pretty small town. I don't know if they rent to you two boys together. I don't know. Might not be the platform I want to run for if I hope to get elected here in LaGrange.
Okay. Well, anyway, we'll keep that. We'll keep the political objective to another day. Before we get started about baseball, you were talking about Netflix. Which do you guys, I'm going to put you all on the spot. I have Netflix, Hulu, and Amazon Prime. Do you have a preference of the three?
Well, I guess Amazon Prime probably gives you the most bang for your buck because if you're going to pay for it all at once instead of monthly, it's a pretty good deal.
You can do it monthly.
Yeah.
How much more money is it? Let's see. It's about... Is it $12.99 a month? It's a few dollars more per month.
It's like $90 for you if you pay it all at one time. And you get your Prime membership, which gives you access to tons of movies and shows. And you get your 2-day shipping on all Prime purchases. And you also get access to Amazon Music, which is really useless if you got Apple Music subscription. I would say Amazon Prime is the better value. If you're talking preference, I guess Netflix would be my preference. But I say Prime. If you're going to have one, Prime is the better value, unless you just don't shop online.
Yeah. What about you, Bubba?
I do not have a preference. I've never used any of the three.
Are you serious?
How in the blue hell have you never used any of the three?
Because I have Dish Network.
Well, I have Dish Network, too, but... That is shocking that you don't have a Netflix or does your wife not shop online much?
No, she buys a few things online, but now she may have an Amazon Prime account, but I do not.
We're starting rumors, Bubba. We're starting rumors.
Yeah. No, you can't use her account. It's not,
I understand that, but. I'm just saying that I have no idea whether she does or doesn't.
Well, I know you like movies. You're primarily a sports guy, but you do like watching some movies. So
right. My sister has Netflix, and I know she and her family love it.
So we use her account.
There you go. A lot of people do that.
The closest I've been, I guess I technically have used Netflix because different times at school on days where there have been crazy schedules and that sort of thing where not much is going to get accomplished, where they're not your typical educational days, if you will, we have used students' accounts to show a movie.
So you've seen it, you just don't have your own account.
So now my teacher license will be revoked.
Well, no, that would be only if you Netflix and chilled.
But I know there's
a lot of people
exclusive programming.
Now,
like what was the show, Kyle? As far as is a about the JUCO football team down in Mississippi. Last Chance U. That was a Netflix exclusive, right?
Yeah.
Correct. Netflix
that was
original.
Really good.
Yeah.
The first, they had two seasons. I don't think they're going to do it anymore.
I'm sure, Bubba, you teach in middle school. I'm sure that you got bombarded last year with 13 Reasons Why.
Oh, yeah.
Actually, I did not.
Are you serious?
I'm sure that
like you said, and I'm sure you're spot on, but yeah, I really didn't hear.
Bubba pays no mind to that jibber jabber. He's all. Look, yeah. Here, do your jumping jacks.
Look, you can watch SportsCenter and like it.
Exactly.
The main thing I've heard is Fortnite.
13 Reasons Why was a very popular book with teenagers, and then it became a Netflix original series. They did a season 2, which I have not watched. First season my wife watched, and I watched it with her, and it actually was good.
I don't understand how they did
a season 2. knowing what the show is, and knowing that it's based on the book, and knowing how it ended, and knowing I don't understand how they possibly did season 2. I need to watch another one to add to it. I don't know why we're talking about this, but another one to add to it, YouTube Red or YouTube Premium, I guess is what it's called now. The only thing worth a damn on there is Cobra Kai.
Oh, yeah.
Cobra Kai Season 1 was fantastic. I need to get a YouTube Premium membership again just to watch Cobra Kai Season 2, then cancel it.
Well, they're actually going to have free. They're going to have it free coming up in I'm doing my Bubba now in September, I believe it was. August,
yeah,
September.
I'm not waiting until September. It's been out since late April. I'll go ahead and just pay the $10 for 1 month. And last season, I binge watched it all in 1 weekend. I actually had a 7-day free trial, and I binge watched it all in 1 weekend and then canceled the membership. So I'm not having to pay for anything. Season 1 was fantastic. I would imagine season 2. I've seen nothing negative about it. Everybody still seems to love it. So if you're a Karate Kid fan, how do you not love it?
It's good. I saw season 1. I'm like you, I haven't seen season 2. So
yeah.
Good stuff. Anyway, I'll say really quickly, I love all three for various reasons. I watch a lot of TV shows on Hulu, and they have some great movies there. Netflix has a lot of great original content. I use that for that. And then it seems like as far as Amazon, you can buy like channels, like all the movie channels.
Yeah.
And so it seems better, like cheaper, about maybe $10 cheaper by doing it that way.
Well, also Amazon gives you the Prime movie lineup, which gives you thousands of movies for free. And then you have a bunch of movies that are new releases. That sometimes in between theater and when you can buy them on DVD, they'll already be up there for $4 each to rent. So, like we watched about a couple months ago, we watched what's the Clint Eastwood movie that came out in November?
The Mule.
We watched it about 2 months ago on Amazon Prime, and it was fantastic.
Yeah, a guy I teach with, he has an Amazon Prime account, and that's what we have. We start each day from about 7:40 to 8:10 with what's called TIE time. It stands for, our nickname's the Patriots. It's called Patriot Intervention and Enhancement. And so basically what it is, it's a time that's set aside for remediation for the kids that need it, but the ones who don't need to be remediated at that time, they have different kind of breakout sessions, if you will, where they can go for about 2 or 3 weeks and choose from various topics. And one of those that me and the guy that I'm referring to lead is Sports Talk. So we've used his Amazon Prime account to show different highlights or sports shows and those sorts of things.
Excellent.
All right. Well, speaking of sports, let's talk. We're the sports objective and not the stream.
We're the objective is sports.
That's right. And we're going to be objective because obviously we Pirates are not in the tournament anymore, so we can talk American Athletic Conference Tournament and all the conference tournaments as we're getting ready for the selection show on Monday. We're going to find out where the Pirates, we know they're going to be in Greenville, but who are they hosting and what, and actually the seeds we're finding out, is that tomorrow night, Bubba?
The host sites will be announced tomorrow night. The seating will be announced.
The 16 host sites will be announced on Sunday night, and they'll be on the bottom line, and then also on Twitter.
8:30 p.m. 8:30 p.m. Okay. Is the official release time.
And this will be the fifth time the Pirates have hosted, first time ever that they've hosted consecutively in back-to-back seasons, and then it's the third time overall in Greenville because the first two times were Wilson and Kinson.
Good stuff there. And the Pirates, I think there's still a chance, razor thin. We were talking this before we started recording, that they could still host a super regional. Doubtful, but there is a chance.
Oh, well, no,
the spirit of hosting if we advance. Yeah, yeah. There's more than a razor thin chance of hosting a super, but
right, to be top 8 seed.
No, we do have an outside chance at still being in the top 8. I saw a tweet by Ronnie Woodward from the Daily Reflector. You can follow him on Twitter at, I believe it's RonnieW11, but he had talked to Mike Rooney, who we've had on the show numerous times, and Mike said that ECU is one of 3 to 5 teams vying for those final 2 or 3 top 8 national seeds. The door's not slammed shut yet, Pirate Nation. As I was looking at some of the numbers and some of the results, Louisville went 0-2 in the ACC tournament in Durham, losing to Boston College, and I believe it was Clemson, only scored 2 runs, I think, in those 2 ball games.
Wow.
Getting beat 5-1 and 7-1, if I'm not mistaken. And then you also have West Virginia and the Mountaineers. We've talked about them potentially being Greenville's a 2 seed. They've had such a good showing in the Big 12 tournament, and it seems as though they've played themselves into potentially hosting, because their RPI is up there at 12 now. They were one of 2 teams, them and Oklahoma State, who were the unbeaten in the Big 12 tournament, and Oklahoma State needed to, I believe, be beaten twice by TCU. And I may have had that backwards, but I know it was that on one side of the bracket. Then you have West Virginia had to be defeated twice by Texas Tech, and Texas Tech beat them 10-3 in game 1, but West Virginia was winning, I think it was 1-0 in the bottom of the 3rd last I checked.
Okay, so West Virginia, unless they didn't put in a bid, maybe if they win that thing, it put themselves in a position to grab that 16 seed or 15 seed and host. That's good. Dave, I want to point something out to you, and you probably realized this and just forgot. Back in 2001, when we hosted the Super Regional, we were not a top 8 seed.
Right.
We were a top 8 seed.
We were number 7 national seed that year.
Okay. I'm sorry. Forget I said anything.
Yeah.
For some reason, I was thinking.
I know what you're saying, though. I'm saying the overall, what I'm trying to say is not that we won't host a super regional, but
it won't be assured to host.
It won't be assured to host. Yes, that's what
right.
I mean. Clarify.
Okay. I was remembering that wrong, Bubba. For some reason, I thought we were not a national seed that year, in Tennessee had pulled off an upset in their regional.
The main reason that really stands out, I know for sure that we were number 7 national seed, is because I just remember on the selection show them showing a few highlights from Harrington Field and just flashing that graphic up on the screen, number 7 East Carolina, blah blah blah. And so once we won the Wilson Regional, we felt, we knew we pretty much had it locked in. The At that time, I didn't have as good of an understanding of how it worked, and it's not always set in stone. But pretty much, if you're a national seed, you're gonna host a super regional unless you have some type of scheduling conflict with your ballpark, like where you're hosting off campus or something of that nature.
Well, hopefully the Pirates can. The main thing is we got to get to a super regional first, so there we don't need to look ahead anyway, and it's going to be interesting, Kyle, to see, like last year, will we have a tough 4 seed like UNCW we were worried about. You called that from the get-go.
Yeah.
I give you correct props.
Wilmington has had a kind of a crappy year, but they had made the semifinals today. Does anybody know how that turned out? Is Wilmington playing in the championship tomorrow, or is it Elon? Who's playing out the Colonial?
Elon defeated William & Mary 9-2, and now I believe Elon has to beat UNC Wilmington twice.
Oh wow!
Okay.
So I'll see if I can.
Could be Wilmington again as the 4th seed in Greenville.
Somebody else that could be headed to Greenville is Campbell. Campbell's won
yep.
the tournament in the Big South, and they have advanced. Aaron Pitt from D1 Baseball actually thinks Campbell's going to be a 3 seed.
Going to be a Wilmington 4 and a Campbell 3. we won't have anybody gunning for us, will they? Good God.
We love you, Ray Tanner. We love you, Ray Tanner. We love you.
How about NC State 2, Wilmington, or Campbell 3, Wilmington 4.
Actually, that would be a hell of a regional.
It would be, but it wouldn't be easy.
That's the point I want to make, though, is when you get to this level, guys, I mean, it really is creme de la creme. I mean, I know that compared to we've been really good at times this season and separated ourselves, but when you get to this level with the regionals, these teams are supposed to be good. It's not like it's a cakewalk, right?
Yeah, but I'd rather not have to deal with rivals that are going to be extra motivated. I just, you know, except for NC,
right?
With the exception of NC State, I'd welcome them. But NC State, Wilmington, Campbell, I'd rather not.
They're dangerous. Yeah, I agree with you. I think, you know, when you think about Coach Scott,
we do much better playing the Hunter. And even though we're having a great season, we'll always be the Hunter when we're playing NC State. And that doesn't bother me. Wilmington or Campbell does.
And it would be great to see Elliot Avent with the Jungle and them upset about the megaphones, or that would be kind of fun.
Yeah.
And guys, look, that's what Elon is beating UNC Wilmington 3-0 in the top of the fifth.
So they're playing game one of their championship game tonight, today? Or?
Well, Elon has to beat them twice. So.
Okay, so is that their championship?
They will have to beat UNC Wilmington again tomorrow if they win this game.
Because tonight is game one of their championship. Okay. If Wilmington wins it, then it's over. If not, then Elon has to beat them again tomorrow to win the championship. Okay.
Right.
Gotcha.
So, and Elon, out of those three teams, Elon, Campbell, and UNC Wilmington, Elon's probably the most dangerous because
they're Friday night starters.
Because their top two starters are very good.
Yeah, they're major league talent.
The Friday night guy is unbelievable, from what I understand. So, that'll be interesting to see what we get. It'll be what it'll be.
You know, I think that exactly, Kyle. I mean, you know, a lot of people get out of the panic room. Everything's going to be fine. Like I said last podcast, and let's have some confidence in the coaching staff, and certainly with the players. They've earned it. They deserve it, and deserve our respect. And you know, it is what it is. Whatever happens, happens. The three of us aren't, and nobody else listening is going to be actually on the field playing for the Pirates. So let's get behind them, support them hard. And, you know, the three of us on this podcast, I can say, are diehard fans. So, and sometimes we, under Scotty Montgomery, we did die hard, right? So, but that's what makes being a Pirate so special is that how many great fans we have that really support the program and stick behind them through thick and thin.
Yeah. Pirate Nation, you are the real deal.
Wow. Thank
and Dave, as you look at our resume, kind of one of the things that really stands out, non-conference, our strength of schedule, 10th overall, I think it was 23rd or 24th.
Right.
But in the those non-conference games, we were 22-9, but four of those nine losses came against teams in the top four of the RPI. Three to UCLA and one at Mississippi State. So that's something. The more I looked at our numbers, the more I think that we do have a very legit chance at getting that eighth slot. I'm not holding my breath, but it's nowhere far from slammed.
And I think there's a lot of people. We'll have Coach O on Monday to talk about it. But I think there's a lot of people that. I think he said it, alluded to it, and I don't know if our experts did. I can't remember, but they reward you by how you do in your regular season. The regular season is more looked at than what you've done. Obviously, they want you to look at what you've done lately, I'm not discounting that, like the conference tournaments, but when it comes to the overall body of work, there's no question East Carolina has been a national seed if you go by just the regular season. If they factor in the conference tournament, that might be what is the difference in what have you done proving lately. This past week, you've lost 3 out of 4. But I don't think they should be penalized for this past week versus what they've done for the whole season. That's just my opinion. I know I'm a homer. East Carolina's my school. But that's the way I feel.
Oh, yeah. a good Aaron Pitt interview with Clip Brock on Pirate Radio a few days ago. And that's what he was saying. Basically, the way the committee looks at it is the tournament's an extension of the regular season.
Yeah, and in other words, yeah, we played 55 games, and we have a tremendous record. You look at the Mississippi State was not a that was not one we got blown out, you know. And you look at the three UCLA games, the number one team in the country, and like Corey said, 5 pitches made the difference between winning the series or, like we did, losing all three.
And another team that's that we already mentioned, Louisville, that went 0-2 in the ACC tournament, I believe they have an identical 43-15 record, and something like that. I may have that backwards. It may be 45-13, but whatever the case, and the Cardinals lost 4 series. One of those series was at UVA, a team that probably will not be making the tournament. And it seems like they had another one like that to a team that was either a bubble team or probably won't be in the tournament. So.
And the only one we lost.
Louisville's obviously a very solid club, even though Louisville's in a better league, we played a very, very tough schedule, and in my opinion, our resume is just as good.
And that's what we have to do in the American, knowing that we have a few teams that are good versus a lot of teams that are good, is the very fact that Cliff is smart. The baseball coach, for people listening to this podcast already know, the coaching staff is the one that makes the scheduling decisions, and then they just pretty much give it to, as a formality, to the athletic director, I guess, as for a final okay. But they're the ones who make the decisions, and I think you get a tip of your hat to Cliff Godwin and the staff for an excellent job on the schedule, because I think that's going to pay dividends this coming week. I think that this team, I tell you another thing, I think between the team already being pissed off the way they played in the American down in Clearwater, the tournament, and the way the crowd is going to be on Friday night and this weekend, I'm telling you guys, it's going to be a great recipe.
Yeah, you never want to lose, obviously, and that goes without saying, but
right.
you can definitely learn from losses, and I really think that in this situation, guys, we're pretty beat up.
Right.
To put it mildly, hopefully getting Sam Lanier back, maybe probably not for a regional, but down the road for a super regional, should we make it there, maybe Elaine Hoover comes back, who knows. But,
Do we have a status on him? I haven't heard. Do we know what how bad the injury is with him?
I have not heard a timetable.
I haven't heard anything, yeah.
All I'd heard was that it was a clavicle.
Worse than we thought, right? It was worse than we thought, or maybe what we originally thought. I don't know.
I don't know that that's the case, but I'd pretty much heard all along, and I think it was Steven Igo saying that there was a chance that he could be back for the postseason.
Well, let's pray that he was great in certainly in the outfield and center field, and certainly we'll pray that he comes back. But if he doesn't, then it gives a chance for other players, as we say, Kyle, next man up. And there's no question. I think you can't argue against that we have great talent at East Carolina. And let's hope that they can put it all together. And the conference tournaments are strange. I can speak firsthand on that, on different teams I've been a part of or coached. And you think that, this team is definitely going to win. They're the number one seed. And just like with East Carolina, it doesn't happen. And you go, why didn't that happen? And there's various reasons. So how many games you play in a, consecutively and all that kind of stuff plays a factor. The weather, all kinds of stuff. So who knows why we didn't win. We didn't. And so now, instead of excuses, now we move on to next week. And I know, Bubba, I want to remind folks, I'll say real quick that make sure on Tuesday that you get all your information in. If you want regional tickets, the deadline is Tuesday, I think at 5. By then, the closing at 1-800-DIAL-EC or ecpirates.com. If you you want your tickets for the Super Regional, they're going to be really busy, so you may have to trial. But 1-800-DIAL-EC, again, you can go this weekend to ecpirates.com and request your tickets.
I got a question for you guys, speaking of tickets. We were told back when football season tickets went on sale that we were going to get our pick your seat, if you want to upload your seat date.
Right.
Has anybody got that?
No, I saw on Facebook, I was going to ask you guys, and I forgot off the air earlier this morning, there was a lady that put in that she was asking the same question about how many people have people already gotten it, because she hadn't.
I hadn't heard anything about it.
I
know it was supposed to happen in June, and the info
you're
was supposed
to be
in
May. You're supposed to get an appointment, right? You're supposed to have an appointment.
They set
up appointment time. You find out, I think, via email what your appointment time is.
Correct. Bubba, have you got yours?
No.
I did that a few years ago, but no, I haven't. That's a good point, Kyle. I'm glad you brought that up. I still haven't received anything, and I was thinking the May 1 priority deadline, that by now, the middle, or maybe by this past week.
This is the end of June. This is the end of May now.
No, that's what I'm saying. I was thinking that. In other words, the deadline is May 1. They moved it back a month to try to drum up, which was an excellent decision on their part, to wait another month. And then I thought by this point, the middle of May or this week, that we would hear something, and we still haven't heard anything. So that's what I'm concerned about. Maybe we can reach out to Ryan Robinson to get clarification.
He said, you guys, this is incorrect. This is not my information. I called the ticket office. About 2 weeks ago, to ask, had the I signed up for the payment plan this year, and I did it with a credit card, so a debit card. I just hadn't received my credit card statement yet, and I wanted to make sure my first payment went through correctly on May 6th, and it did. So you guys can quit worrying now.
Yeah.
But I asked him, if you didn't want to change your seat, if you want to stay where you are, if you need to worry with going in on your date and time. And he told me no. He said, if you want to stay where you are, if you don't want to upgrade, you don't need to do anything. Now, I don't know if that's true or not.
I've heard that before in the past. I don't know if that's currently. I know that was true in the past, but I don't know about it now.
That's what he told me. Like I say, I don't know if that's true. I want some clarification on that also, because if I don't need to do anything, I'm not worried about it, because I don't want to change my seat. I don't need an appointment. I'm not worried about it. I was just going about my business. But if I have to go in to claim my seat, then I certainly will.
Yeah, I like where I am. I'm in section 2, and basically I'm 6 rows from as soon as you get up off the – as soon as you walk from the concourse up the stairs, you turn around, I'm 6 rows. And I have aisle seats, so I love that because
A lot of people, I think you're going to have to go for your parking spot. I think everybody has to pay for parking this year. I guess if you lose your parking away from pay parking, you're going to need to go and claim your spot. But I think besides that, most people are probably pretty happy with their seats. I don't understand the point of it. I don't know what we're doing.
Aren't we going to have our special premium spot, the Sports Objective spot that we can park in right near the stadium?
I mean, did you pay for it, Dave?
I'm expecting it, yeah. I expect it, yeah.
You expect it from who?
You think it would just
be given to us? Okay, well.
No, I didn't say given to us. But
John,
it's a thousand. No, actually.
John Gilbert, Ron Roberts.
It's right there behind Town Bank Tower. I saw
it.
We demand it right behind town. But
it's
$1,000.
It's based on your priority points, and then it's in addition to that.
Well, you know, we do enough for the university promoting things, and I think we deserve the spot.
In kind, we'll get it in kind, right?
Right, we're getting exactly, and we'll park there, and we'll have the plug-in. Is that where the plug-ins and all that crap is?
Yeah,
the fancy tailgate.
Yeah,
all right, great.
And I'm gonna have the I'm going to work on the Dish Network where we can have our big screen TV and the
We don't even really need it. You got your ESPN app. We can stream that mess.
Right.
Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, well, it'll be great. Y'all come on over for the tailgate. We're going to have we'll have cold beer and hot wings and, you know.
Terry Gallagher singing karaoke.
There you go. That sounds good to me.
Something else, Dave, is as far as the baseball ticket situation, it's kind of like football as far as don't think that just that May 1st priority deadline, you can still get the regional tickets. But they will go on sale to the general public, so you're not guaranteed anything.
You might be sitting in a spot you don't want to. You're not going to be guaranteed that you will have, if you're a regular season ticket holder.
Right.
You and I, we're gonna pack that place. It's gonna be rocking. Jake Agnos is gonna blow people away again, and you know, I think Cooch Maynard will be. That's the thing is that the format for the regional, I think. It fits us. We're going to be in much better shape with everything based on what we had this week. It seems like the conference tournaments, the way they're stretched out throughout the week, and I know people can say we have the midweek games and all that, but I think it's a lot more pressure than the regional. That's my opinion. What do you think?
I don't know.
Well, I think when your pitching depth is what ours is right now, or your bullpen's performing how ours is currently performing in the last few or several games, when you fall into the loser bracket right off the bat and have to win five straight games, that's going to be hard under the best of circumstances, much less when your staff is struggling some.
Yeah, and you know, same thing with the regionals. We really need to get out of that loser's bracket situation at all costs.
Yeah, especially day one, but yeah, I mean – Even that winner's bracket game where you're going to have to beat somebody and then beat an undefeated team twice. So,
yeah.
The guys with the ACC tournament, something that is helping the Pirates a bit, because one of our big road wins this year was that midweek game late in the season, first week of May at UNC. Pirates took down the Tar Heels 9-5 that night, but the Tar Heels are in the championship game against either the Wolfpack or Georgia Tech. So Georgia Tech, with the strong showing it's had in the ACC tournament, is probably locked down one of those national seeds.
They're going to be like 6 or 7, bet, right?
I would think so. Maybe 8, but... somewhere in that 6-8 range for sure, along with a Texas Tech.
Right.
And maybe a Louisville, or who knows, maybe an East Carolina.
Do you guys want to, we'll come back on the other side. Do you want to introduce our guest? You want to go to him now?
Yeah, let's catch up with another slugger from that potent lineup of 2004, the Water Buffalo, and that is Mark Minicazzi. Let's talk to Kaz right now.
Baseball season continues, and Bubba, I know that we're very excited to have another great Pirate.
Absolutely. We're continuing to catch up with players from that 2004 season, the winningest team in East Carolina baseball history, 51 wins. Already caught up with the Lawhorns and Ryan Norwood. Welcome into the show, Mark Minicazzi. Mark, welcome in.
Gentlemen, how you doing?
We're doing great. Disappointed after yesterday, but life goes on. It's beautiful sunshine in eastern North Carolina, and we're going to do well next week.
Season starts tomorrow, 0-0.
That's right, and we're wanting to get your thoughts on, obviously, this team this year, and obviously we're disappointed, but at the same time, we know that even though you don't win the conference tournament, you can still do very well and possibly go to Omaha still with this team.
Yeah, it's been a special year, man. I try to keep up as much as possible. I get a pretty cool perspective. I got to spend a lot of the guys who are juniors and seniors this year, I got to spend a fall with them. I went back to do my student internship. So I got to see the inside of, you know, the baseball program and see a lot of these guys that are the grown men now when they were young pups. So, you know, it's awesome to see, you know, the leadership they have at the top. And, you know, I think they got a strong team. They got, you know, the pitching, they got the hitting, they got the defense. I mean, they have everything to just put it together at the right time. You know, hopefully we'll be seeing them in Omaha.
Cause as you take a look at things, let's actually go back to your recruitment coming out of Wayne, PA, and talk about your path to ECU.
My path was a little different. Coach Mack was the coach at the time. He had come up to Pennsylvania to look at a pitcher we had on our travel team. At the end of practice, he came over to me and was like, hey, you know, you want to come on a visit to East Carolina? And I think at the time I told him, I was like, I'm going to Division I. I'm not going to a JUCO.
Wow.
At the time, we didn't, you know, I didn't know at the time. I talked to one of my buddies who was getting recruited, and he had been on a visit. He said, oh, they're a great Division I program. You know, it's a big party school. So I said, you don't let, all right, I'll take that visit. So I went down. You know, checked a couple of the boxes. I went down, saw the baseball program was great, so it was a check. I hit up Bojangles and had sweet tea for the first time in my life. That was a double check. And the plethora of blondes that were in East Carolina was pretty much the thing that signed the contract. I think Sunday morning I didn't get about 5 miles on the 264 before I called Coach McFly and said, where do I sign?
There's no doubt about it that ECU, that you can't argue. I'll never forget when I was at a CAA basketball tournament, and there was this fan from Old Dominion who was talking trash about how ugly our cheerleaders are, and there was another guy who said, look, I don't even pull for East Carolina, they're not my school, but they've got some of the prettiest women ever. He's like, I can't believe that you would resort to that, saying stuff like that. I'll never forget that.
Yeah, it definitely influenced my decision, I'll tell you that.
I'm glad they did, and we're glad to have you on the team. And certainly, what was I know you got? We've talked to some of your other teammates. You guys sound like you're a lot of fun. Like we should have been on that team and should have fun with you.
We had a little fun. I think I heard a couple podcasts before. You were talking about Maisie, how tough he was. You know, when he got a call probably later at night, I'm sure the first thing that went in his mind was, oh, what did Cos do? but no, we had a lot of fun. I mean, on and off the field, we had, and I played a long time. It was probably the closest group of guys I ever played with. And, you know, as Walt said, you know, there was not really any egos. We all picked each other up. We all wanted to see each other succeed, and you know, we fed off each other's success. When one guy started doing well, everyone else wanted to do well. So I think that really helped our team. Everybody wanted to, you know, be the best, and it made our team really, really dominant.
And then to feed off of that, right? You feed off of greatness. If you're around greatness, then you tend to want to do better.
Yeah, when everyone's hitting 380, you don't want to hit 200. So, yeah, you got to pick yourself up.
Talking about hitting 380, like you said, Walt was batting up above 380. Then and you have Ryan Jones, Daryl and Trevor Lawhorn, Jamie Page, and John Poppert hit the ball well. I mean, just so many guys throughout that lineup. And you had a young Jake Smith. But that 2004 season, you hit a little over 340, and I think 10 bombs, 50 driven in. So what are your memories of that special season?
My biggest memory was standing on first base. John Poppert came up to bat left-handed. We made the decision, I think, the day before. He was struggling a little. He said, I'm going to go up left-handed. First pitch looked terrible. Second pitch looked terrible, even worse. Third pitch, he hit the ball off the top of the fence in right field. I was laughing as I was running around third, and I look up, and John's on first base. John was so excited, he tripped over first base, and I think he should have the longest single in ECU history. But I mean, there were so many memories of that team, and we had so much fun. I know we had a supposedly an investigation on after a couple weekends. Teams couldn't believe that we hit so many home runs, and our team just from 1 through 9 could hit. That we must have been getting signs from the outfield. I think it was like a weekend after we went to Cincinnati and put up a 30-something spot and I think another 20 and a 15. So
I remember that.
I don't think it was us relaying signs. I think we were just pretty good.
Yeah, and there's something like 155 or 160 doubles, just ridiculous, and over 100 bombs, if I recall correctly. But as far as records go, one of the things that Walt wanted me to chime in with and get your response and take on, he said, ask the Water Buffalo if he holds an unofficial record for strikeouts looking.
I probably had 2 records in ECU. Strikeouts looking, my freshman year, I definitely hold. If there's a backwards K out there record, I got it. I walked back to the dugout a lot my freshman year. Second record I 100% know I own is most study hall hours accumulated. Coach Mazie kept me in study hall pretty much every minute he could. So I think they're about the only ones I have. Backwards K's and study hall hours. But no, Walt was awesome. We had a lot of fun. I lived with him. I don't know how he lived with me, but we lived together for a while, and you know, we had a lot of fun.
And something else, I was telling Walt a story about how my dad had met Daryl Lawhorn at a Friends of ECU baseball function, I guess a couple years or so after he had finished up playing for the Pirates, and he had on some type of like pink flowered shirt or some type of crazy crazy looking shirt, and Walt started laughing. He said, "Ask Kaz if he got that from his closet."
Yeah, we had a couple nights in a couple years there though. We took some trips down to downtown Old Town or in downtown Scottsdale, and Jesus, I'm in the wrong place now. Nights we went to Greenville downtown. I'm in Scottsdale. I spend way too much time down here. But nights in Greenville, yes, we had very many theme nights where we would empty out the Goodwill and all have some pretty crazy clothes on. Luckily, they didn't have Instagram and Twitter and Facebook in our day.
What kind of outfits did you guys have? What kind of... Now you got my curiosity up, Kaz. What kind of themes did y'all have?
I know. I think I still have a Sweet Tart shirt. We had a lot of beautiful coats that I don't think anybody would ever wear. You know, we like to dress up. There was all types of different outfits we would take out to the bars. I know one of Randy Mays' favorites was when we went to different functions, he always, you know, made us dress appropriate. We have to, you know, make sure we look good. He would always say, you know, we never knew that jean shorts is a good look, but Randy Mazie would wear them everywhere we went. So we had a lot of themed jean shorts nights. Yeah, he brought the jorts back into style. I'll tell you that.
Jorts only look good if they're really short on females. Guys, never wear them.
Yeah. Well. You know, if Mazie does have West Virginia comes to our regional, go to Walmart, take away all the jorts, and you know he's not going to know what to do.
What are your thoughts on that? You know, West Virginia, a lot of people have rejected this, the 2 seed in Greenville, being a former player for Mazie. How will it feel seeing him in a West Virginia jersey standing there coaching against East Carolina in Clark LeClair?
You know, Randy wins everywhere he goes. I mean, he pushed us to the limits a lot of times. A lot of us had different relationships with him. I probably was one of his bigger headaches, but he was a great guy. I do have the secret formula how to beat him, though. If we do play him, all you have to do is shut down any Golden Corral within 50 miles of Greenville, and the team won't be able to eat for the entire weekend. So,
so he was a Golden Corral guy?
I, you know, for a long time, my bucket list was to hit every Golden Corral in the, you know, Conference USA cities. And, you know, my bucket list is checked. I've ate at every Golden Corral on the southeastern part of the U.S.
You do know the CEO of Golden Corral is a pirate.
Well, yeah. You know, that's probably why we're there all the time. You know, it was good food. Three times a day. If he's a pirate, that should be shut down for when Randy Mays is in town.
Yeah, James and Connie Maynard are the ones that own Golden Corral.
Well, we went to Golden Corral a lot.
Something else I wanted to see if you recalled, Kaz, was in 2005. You obviously had the opportunity to play in Clark LeClaire Stadium in its inaugural season, but how about Ricky Brooks' no-hitter?
Oh, that was impressive. I mean, that guy had, you know, so much ability and had some electric stuff. That was an awesome experience. That stadium, I mean, I know all of us, you know, signed back in the day for that vision to play in that stadium and to be able to get a chance to be the first one on that field and play in there. I mean, it was awesome. It's great to see even where it's going today and where it's gone in the last 10 years, how it keeps on expanding and growing and becoming nicer.
What do you think about Coach Cliff Godwin? I know that he was, I guess, finishing up right before you guys got there, but what do you think about what he's done for the program?
It's, you know, I didn't know much. I knew Cliff when I got into school, and we didn't have a very good relationship at first because he was a UNCW coach. And they dogpiled on our field on a Tuesday. So I didn't love Cliff for doing that, but, you know, I got an opportunity to come back 3 years ago and, I had broke my ankle playing. So I had 3 months in a boot. I was able to come back and work with the program and, you know, see the inner workings at ECU. And man, it is impressive what Cliff Godwin does. I mean, the work ethic he has, you know, how he challenges the guys, how he prepares the guys. You know, I don't think there's another guy in the nation that's doing a better job. I mean, he's pretty incredible how he turns boys into men, man. So it was an awesome experience. I was there for a fall and got to watch, you know, a lot of those guys, you know, grow, and he's doing a great job, and it's awesome to see, you know, those freshmen when I was there developing the juniors and seniors and the development of players and, you know, not even that, just the character of the players. I mean, you see it, those guys are, you know, second to none.
Kaz, kind of along those same lines, so I know your playing career ended just a few years ago after, what, about 11 years, 12 years in the minor leagues. But from your perspective as a former player and someone who played all those years in the minors, talk about that professional locker room that Coach Godwin wants to have at Clark LeClaire Stadium, like what that would have meant to you had it been in existence, and what do you think it will mean going forward?
I mean, 3 years ago, I think we had like five pairs of shorts, different shirts. When I played at ECU, now I'm aging myself. When I played at ECU, I think we had one T-shirt and one pair of shorts. They were all like, you know, really low grade. No offense to Russell, but I think they were Russell. Our numbers were fading after 2 weeks. But man, I mean, they're turning that into, you know, a lot of the guys. You look at our roster. Most of the guys who played at ECU when we went there, we were the guys that didn't get into NC State, didn't get into Chapel Hill, didn't play, you know, Virginia, these big programs. We were, you know, guys looking for a place to, you know, prove everyone wrong that we should belong and, you know, we should have played at those bigger programs. And, you know, to see over the last 15 years, you know, it was really Coach LeClaire's vision was instead of players coming there because they had no other option, I mean, I think a lot of people are making the decision to come to East Carolina now because it's an elite program. And, you know, And it's awesome to see. I mean, we had Mackenzie Gore a couple years ago, second overall pick, and, you know, committed to ECU. So I think the culture and the guys we're bringing in now we can get those elite players with, you know, the facilities we have, the players coming out of there, the development that you get at ECU. It's pretty awesome to see.
You know, Kaz, one of the great things about doing this podcast is when we have the likes of Kyle Peterson and Mike Rooney, different ones that say it's Stu Murray. National experts say that they feel like East Carolina has an SEC-type program. That's a huge compliment for us.
Yeah, it's come a long way. I know that was the vision back in the day, and, you know, I know the 2001 team, the 2004, or the 2008 was another one of the super regionals.
Yeah, 2009,
yeah. You know, our teams were the ones that wanted to build it so we could, you know, be that powerhouse. We want to be that team that everyone looks at their schedule and goes, oh, we got to play at East Carolina. So I think everyone does that already, but, you know, it's awesome to see where the growth of ECU has become. And, you know, it's recognizable. I know when I just got drafted, the first couple of people were like, Eastern Carolina, what school is that?
Oh, that still happens. If somebody calls it Eastern Carolina, what you do, Cause, just slap the shit out of them.
Yeah, I'm sure. Now we'll have to go visit Cause in jail. So that'll be good.
I mean, it's 2019. If you don't understand the name of the school by now, chances are you're really, really stupid.
You obviously don't know anything about college baseball.
Yeah.
But Kaz, I know you take a lot of pride in your hair. So you look at some of the current guys like Brian Packard with his mohawk, I guess Brady Lloyd with the mullet, and Brick had it at the beginning of the season, but Alec Burleson with his flow as well. So what do you think about those guys?
It's about time some ECU Pirates got some good flow. I mean, I think that's the one thing we were missing for a while was good hair. You know, everybody wants to have, you know, we called it the cavi cut, Brian Kavanaugh cut.
Yes.
We'd have zeros on the sides, two on the top, super smooth, look, you know, great. It's time that, you know, we got some long hair out there and, you know, showing a little personality. So, no, it's off the state. You know, it's, I don't know, I get called the water buffalo, and you don't really probably see many water buffaloes, so most people in Greenville don't know what they are, but they're actually really large, majestic, beautiful creatures that have beautiful hair.
With the exception of the one I sent you yesterday, I apologize.
Yeah, you sent me a hairless one. You know, if I had no hair, I would look just like that. But they have beautiful hair, and when you put beautiful hair on a water buffalo, it's a beautiful thing.
And another story I wanted to see if you had a response to before we move on and talk about your professional career some more is that's what Walt said, that one of the funny stories that he shared with us regarding practice is Coach Mazie loved to schedule practices when the Eagles were playing. So he said he took a radio out to practice and had it in the back of your pants and had the wires going up through your sleeves. Is that true or
yes,
false?
Yes, I would I should plead the fifth, but at this time I can say that is absolutely true. I would wear my autographed Coy Detmer, which was our backup quarterback at the time. I would wear his jersey under my ECU jersey, and I would – back in the day it was tough. We didn't have these wireless earbuds and stuff like that. I had to do some work. I had to put some tape into it, but I was able to listen to the game. We had FM radio at the time, so I had to find the right stations, but –
yeah,
where
did you get the Eagles game in Greenville on FM at the time? That had to be a challenge in itself.
We were playing Washington Redskins that day, and I don't think Mazie knew that we get the Skins games in Greenville. So I was able to work my way, even though he was very, very good at somehow putting all our Sunday practices at the exact time the Eagles were playing. I made it work. I could multitask.
Gotcha.
that 2005, after that season concluded out at Arizona State, you were drafted in the 17th round by the San Francisco Giants. So talk about that and your time in the minors.
I had a long, long time. I think I played 12 years. I played with the Giants, the Nationals. I played in five different countries. You know, I got to play at pretty much every level. I played high A baseball. Well, I guess I first went to short season. I choked my last 30 at bats. I didn't get a hit and lost the batting title in the league. You know, my second year I played in San Jose. Had a bunch of injuries during my career, but over that period of time I was able to, I got probably the second most fun team I ever played on was our 2007 San Jose Giants team. We won the Cal League Championship. I don't think I could get out that entire series and was able to win the MVP. And it was pretty cool. You look at the guys who were part of that team. I mean, Pablo Sandoval, Travis Ishikawa. I mean, our entire team, other than me, I think, played in the big leagues. So it was pretty cool to see an experience like that. I had a couple rounds in indie ball, went back to the Giants after a couple surgeries and played in double A, won a batting title in the Eastern League in 2013. I think I had five all-star appearances in 12 years. And I used to, until last year, I held a home run title in Nicaragua, which I might have to dust off the cleats and go back this winter to regain my home run title. But no, I got an awesome opportunity to go play in Venezuela. I played 4 years in Venezuela. I played a year in Dominican Republic, 2 years in Mexico. So, you know, it was an amazing experience. You know, I got to learn from probably, I spent a lot of time working with Barry Bonds when I was with the Giants. I mean, not many people get that opportunity. I got to take ground balls for 2 weeks straight with Omar Vizquel. You know, they're probably two of the best players at, you know, their skill set of all time. And, you know, to be able to have those experiences and, you know, learn the game of baseball from some of the, you know, greatest there's been, it was pretty awesome, rewarding experience.
Having the opportunity to – I'm sorry, Dave, go ahead.
I was just going to ask a quick question. Can you tell us, as far as you said the country was, what was it like being an American? You have where you're speaking English and pretty much Spanish-speaking countries. So was that hard?
My first and second year going down to Venezuela, I didn't know anything. By my third year, I had to. It wasn't bad. I mean, they made it so easy for you down there. We would stay at amazing, you know, five-star resorts. You know, it was amazing experience there. We'd get 20,000 to 30,000 people a game.
Oh, and, wow.
I mean, you would walk, it would be the third inning, a guy would be on second base and you would start shaking, not because you were nervous, but because the crowds were so loud and there was DJ in right field playing some techno music. It was an experience. It was a concert. It was like Coachella and a baseball game at the same time. It was insane every night. But I mean, it was a great experience. I got to spend 4 years. I think I'm probably like the only American to ever last 4 years in Venezuela. They cut guys really quick. I've seen guys play 2-3 games and get cut. So it was put up or go home there. So it was awesome. I love my time down there. I got a nickname down there and everything. So it was a good experience. And
what was the nickname? El Water Buffalo?
It wasn't Water Buffalo. You know what? I was a little disappointed with the non-water buffalo. I don't know if that translates in Spanish. Maybe that's what it is.
De agua. Agua buffalo.
I was called La Muralla, so I was called the Great Wall because I guess I made a couple decent plays in the field. And so I was the Great Wall. So we'd go on the road and you'd roll up to the place, and I was pretty much the only white guy on the team. So you see the jerseys with La Muralla on it. You're like, oh wow, I think I arrived in Venezuela. So no, it was cool. It was a surreal experience, and man, it was a lot of fun.
That's interesting to hear. You don't hear a lot of baseball players going overseas compared to, like, especially basketball. Some football, I know.
Yeah, no, it's tough. There's each team only gets between 4 to 6 imports. So,
oh wow.
There's only 8 teams in the league, and you get 4 to 6 spots. Usually 4 or 5 of them are starting pitchers, and then you usually get 1 or 2 hitters. So, it was a very as a minor league player, it was an awesome opportunity. If you could get to Venezuela, that was, you know, the best opportunity to keep on playing and get an opportunity to show what you can do against, you know, great talent.
What team was that farm system a part of that had a franchise in Venezuela?
So they were not a franchise. They're actually their own, you know, major league of Venezuela.
Okay.
So our team would have, yeah, it wasn't affiliated, but we had so different teams. So the Giants, we had some Giants coaches on our team. Eddie Perez, who's one of the coaches for the Braves. He was my manager.
Okay.
One of the best guys ever. But yeah, guys from all types of different organizations. I know some of the Endurance Arte was our center fielder, Freddie Galvis.
Is it played at like during months where we're not playing baseball here, or is it?
Yes. Okay. Yeah, no, we start in October. It's October, November, December, and then this January into February is the Caribbean series. You probably see it occasionally on TV, but once you get to February, it's the Caribbean series. So the best teams from Mexico, Venezuela, Puerto Rico, and Dominican Republic all play in a big series. So
okay.
It's crazy.
The playing surfaces and stuff, or is it, would they stack up with everything you'd see in this country?
Yes, some did. The major cities would. I mean, they were, don't get me wrong, they were triple-A parks. They were good. Some of the dirt on the places would be pretty bad. I know I got hurt one time because there was a soft spot near second, and I, for some crazy reason, tried to stretch a double into a triple. Never did that again. I pulled my hamstring on, you know, a soft piece of ground there. But, you know, the fields were good enough. I mean, we had probably every team, if we had a roster of 35 guys, 25 were in the majors. So it was good enough for the major league guys to come and play and not get hurt. So
that sounds like a lot of fun. And certainly you have a favorite American city that you played in and a favorite one overseas in the Caribbean?
I played in Richmond, Virginia, which is actually pretty close to Greenville.
Yeah.
I played in Richmond. I had an awesome, obviously I played some of my better baseball there. Unbelievable atmosphere. They would get probably 5,000 to 6,000 a game. I'm still friends. I'm actually my company is one of the sponsors for the AA All-Star game. So I'll be out there in they call it a celebrity home run derby. I call it a semi-celebrity home run derby since I'm in it. Yeah, I'll be out there in July for that AA All-Star game. But that was probably one of my favorite places to play in the U.S. other than Vegas. Vegas was awesome, but I kept on getting hurt when I was there. So bad karma over there.
You talk about some of the guys that you played with on that San Jose Giants team. Who were some of the other guys that you played against that are currently in the big leagues?
If you pulled up any roster, I think probably 5 to 6 of the guys I played against or with or no. So it's cool. It's cool to watch. I don't really have a favorite team. I follow a lot of my friends. I'm still a silent hitting coach for a couple guys. I get some film here and there from some of my buddies when they're struggling, and they're like, what am I doing wrong? So, you know, I was the older guy on most teams that I played at the end of my career, to see some of the guys, you know, being all stars in the big leagues now, and you know, seeing the development of some guys is pretty impressive. I know when I played against probably my most, I'm just going to throw this out there, probably my most memorable experience in 12 years. I'm not a numbers guy, but I don't think anyone has ever done this. I faced Noah Syndergaard. And I faced him four times in seven innings. I struck out three at bats on nine pitches and hit into a triple play. And that was a pretty memorable, memorable experience for me. I got tossed in the seventh inning because I wasn't striking out a fourth time. Facing guys like him, seeing, you know, I've faced, you know, Aroldis Chapman, Max Scherzer, all those guys. It's pretty cool to be able to get in the box and look up and see those guys on the mound and be like, let's go, big guy.
I have a question for you, an obvious one. Do you have any aspirations to coach baseball?
You know, I do. I started a baseball company, so that is taking a lot of my time now. I love the game of baseball. Being away from it for the last 2 years, it's probably something I will look down the road. I love the game. I love working with hitters. I love, you know, the fielding aspect of it. So, yeah, that's something probably down the road that I would probably look into is, you know, maybe getting back into pro ball. I know I've been asked to coach down in Venezuela and a couple different, you know, places like that. So that's something probably later in my in career that I would probably think of doing.
Well, sounds like with your knowledge and if you're helping people and certainly with your background that definitely – Just being around a park and being around some great folks like Barry Bonds, I mean, you definitely have a lot of knowledge there.
Yeah, when you're around a guy like that, I almost to a fault, I think I took too much information. I had to step back and realize I didn't see the ball like Barry Bonds saw the ball, and he's a little more gifted, talented than I am. But it was amazing to be able to pick those guys, sit in a cage for, I think I spent about 6 days. I got to work one-on-one with Barry when I was in camp in 2014. And I mean, it was just awesome to hear the things that he would do and some of the drills he did, which just don't seem like you could even do. And he'd get in there even retired and hit better than all of us. So it was cool. It was awesome to be able to soak in that kind of knowledge and, you know, be around those guys and just, you know, hear their experiences. And I know being around Willie Mays was pretty awesome because if you talk to Willie Mays, the guy never had a slump in his life. He'd tell stories that we'd ask him, like, what was your worst slump? And, you know, he would tell you, like, I never had a slump. And, you know, that mindset, that's one thing, I took away in my career. I went out on the field every day. I think there was only one day I went on the field in my entire career where I didn't step across that line and said I'm going to be the best player today. I did play against Albert Pujols and Mike Trout one day, and I was like, all right, I'm third today. But I mean, it was awesome. It was to have that experience and to go out there and be like, you know what, I'm trying to be the best player on this field every day. You know, getting knowledge, you know, that's the way Willie Mays went at it. That's how Barry Bonds, that's how some of the greats. And, you know, having that mentality, having that confidence that, you know, every day you're going to be the best player, I think was something that I took from those kind of guys and tried to apply to my game.
Earlier in the podcast, you talked about Mackenzie Gore being committed to the Pirates. That's what Mike Trout was as well back in the Billy Godwin era.
Yeah, he was, you know, that Mike Trout, he became a pretty decent player.
Yeah,
man.
Yeah. Not too shabby.
I would have liked to see him spend a couple years, you know, getting better at ECU, but, you know, going in the draft might have been the right choice that time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can you imagine him with a metal bat?
I mean, he would have been there at the same time as Roller, so I don't know how you would pitch
to
those
God.
Guys.
Yeah,
so that would have been rough.
He'd have hit it over Charles Boulevard.
Over the jungle, right?
Yeah. Oh, man.
Well, Kaz, I'll tell you what. we're very excited to have you on. And certainly, before we let you go, we've been asking all the guys, if we make it to Omaha, are you going to be able to make it?
I will be there. I have we talk on our – we have a little chat, a bunch of guys from 2004, and I think most of us could commit it. We got a couple stragglers who haven't committed to it yet, but 100% I will be there. I'm sort of hoping – I don't know. I haven't looked at the possibilities, but if we don't host a super regional, I'd like to see if they could get out to, like – Arizona State. It's in my backyard. I would love to see the boys out here. But, yeah, no, when we get to Omaha, you know, I feel pretty confident. If we get a chance at Super Regionals, I'm putting my word on it today. If we come up, we got a chance to win, and when we got Turner Brown coming up the bat, we're going to Omaha. That you know, that guy is an amazing leader. I got to work with him a lot when I was at ECU. And, man, to see a kid work so hard, and the character a lot of those guys have, I hope they're able to break us through and get us to Omaha.
And something about Turner Brown's performance this year, and Turner, and you're probably aware of this, and he and his family lost their home prior to the season.
Yeah.
Talking about his leadership and just in times of adversity, certainly spot on.
Yeah, he's a great kid with amazing character, and it embodies that whole team. I mean, I know Cliff does an amazing job of, you know, making everyone accountable and, you know, making sure that, you know, it's character first and, you know, be good people, and it shows that those guys come out, you know, great people on and off the field. And, you know, I'm excited to watch the regionals, super regionals, and when they get up there, I know Trevor said he's going to be the first one they see, so maybe I'll be the second one. I might be going to get a beverage or something at the time, so I'll be number two.
All right. Kaz, we appreciate you, man, so much for coming on, and definitely love to have you back. I hope that we can be deep into June talking about Pirate baseball.
I love it. Best of luck, guys, and thank you for having me on.
Thank you, Kaz, very much. What a great guy. I tell you what, he was a lot of fun. And all the guys were, I tell you, the 2004 team that we interviewed over the last week or so, you can tell why they won 51 games. Just by talking to them, the confidence, the fun, they seem to be, I know Maisie was very tough on them, but they seem to be a lot looser than a lot of baseball players you talk to. I know that it's no pressure now because that was 15 years ago, but I don't know. There's something. There's an aura, an air about them, an it factor. You can tell by just talking to them. Is that? Am I out of line to say that?
Oh, yeah. They're all a lot of fun to talk to. Sure, they got great personalities.
Yeah, and they definitely. I think that when you look at their record speaks for their self. Their stats speak for themselves, and I really enjoyed talking to them. And I know, Bubba, we're going to continue to work hard and be talking to people throughout the rest of the baseball season, right?
Yeah, we will. We'll be catching up with some more former players, the likes of Warren Gaspar, leadoff man for that 2001 team. And then also we'll hear from Greenville Mayor, P.J. Conley, and we'll talk to him. Actually, he pitched back in the, I guess, Randy Maisie era. And yep. We'll talk to PJ. He's a lefty from Wisconsin, and so he has the player's perspective, but then also now being mayor of Greenville, we'll talk to him about the economic impact of hosting a regional. So that'll be an interesting interview. We'll also catch up with a guy from CBS Sports and Sirius XM, Barrett Salee. He wrote an article about Art Briles being hired as a Texas high school coach. I believe it was Mount Vernon High School, which is about 100 miles or so slightly northeast of Dallas. So that will be an intriguing interview because obviously a lot of very strong opinions regarding that Art Briles situation.
Yeah, and you know, Bubba and Kyle, we were talking about that I think it was last night, and I just think that there's a lot of stuff that we'll never know about that situation. But I'm not Kyle, you know how much I love football, but I'm not 100% convinced that he knew everything that was going on. I'll just say, I'll put it like that.
Well, you don't know. It's hard to know that, but you hear that a lot, that maybe he did not have as much knowledge as initially thought. And I've even heard that he went to the administration, and the administration basically told him, you know, we're keeping the squad. So who knows what happened. The man's tried to get back into coaching in the CFL, and he tried to be an OC in the CFL. And
Southern Miss, right?
Second day on the job, didn't get to coach a game. He tried to become the OC at Southern Miss, and the head coach wanted to hire him, and their president, they didn't have an AD at the time because we hired him. Their president wouldn't let it go through because of basically flashback from women's groups there on campus and such. So I Art's now in a high school, and I'm sure there's, you know, if this doesn't go through for him, I don't know that he'll ever coach again.
Yeah.
If he ends up, you know, if he gets too much backlash from this, about the only way I can see him coaching is, it seems like Nick Saban can hire anybody he wants to be a
consultant.
That's
true. Oh, wow. I thought about that.
So
yeah.
That may be his best bet. Go be a consultant for Saban.
And that would be a good fit. That's not a bad idea.
It'll be interesting to see if this actually happens, if he ever coaches a game at that high school. If the backlash doesn't get too bad.
Well, you know something? I mean, my God, if you go from Baylor to we're on the top of the mountain there and you really put Baylor, make them relevant. I mean, they hadn't been relevant, not like that, in a long, long time.
No.
And you look at that with the Baylor Bears, and he put Baylor, people used to, you know, almost count that as a win, you know? And he made them relevant.
Baylor was awful.
Yeah, and he made them relevant, and then all of a sudden he made them from relevant to where they were one of the top, I would say dogs, but I guess top Bears in the conference there in the Big 12. And then you have a situation where all that stuff went down, and I think that he's paid the price big time, his reputation. You hear as soon as you hear the name Art Briles, that's what's bad. If things are not true of all that he knew and all that, then it's really bad that I think the administration made him the fall guy. I really believe that. And they knew more than they were winning and successful. And they, I don't know. But I've just always felt funny about that case that, we don't know. In other words, we don't know the whole truth. The stuff was going on, I'm sure, not questioning that. I'm questioning about the administration making him like the bad guy, like he was in on everything, and they knew nothing about it. That's where my problem comes in, when I think they knew about it and they were trying to cover it up, which is totally different, right?
Yeah, I mean, I don't like to say we'll never know the full story, but,
right,
you know, it'll be interesting to see what all plays out here with him getting his job at a high school, how it's all going to go down.
Think about that. Just think about saying that, Kyle, just right there, high school.
Yeah.
Yeah, you do.
At Wilson Primary.
You do.
All right. Wow, there you go.
I'm there every Monday through Friday. That's right.
Fan. It's a Dave Richmond fan there at the Walmart, probably.
That's right. I had to cut that out. But anyway, Art Briles, he actually, think about what I was getting at. If Art Briles is coaching at a high school. Think about that, high school. If you don't think that he's suffered enough, and I'm not trying to say, you know, like Art Briles like that, but I'm just saying he had to take a job at a high school. And he's going to have to climb with the ladder. He's not a spring chicken. How old is he? 60s? Late 50s?
I was going to say, before he got into college coaching, I believe he coached high school football in Texas for right at 20 years. So, yeah, you're
okay.
Probably right. Probably early 60s or something. I don't know, late 50s,
well,
early
60s. Well, he's got a grown son that's the offensive coordinator at Florida State. So, there you go.
Right. So what do you think, guys? Do you think if you were – I'm going to put you guys on the spot. If you could hire Art Briles, would you?
As head coach, I don't know, because I don't know the amount of backlash it would cause. as offensive coordinator with a established head coach that people liked? In other words,
if Mike Houston needed an offensive coordinator,
yes, absolutely.
Okay, so in other words, you don't give him the HC, you give him the OC.
Not yet.
Okay, I got you.
OC, yes, definitely.
All right. What do you think, Bubba? I'm gonna put you on the spot.
I could see that, but I'd have to be satisfied with the extensive homework that would be done.
So in other words, the
and his contract.
So in other words, we need to do a better job of vetting than we did with Cecil Staten. Is that what you're saying?
Absolutely.
All right. So we definitely will. Instead of Cal and I, can do a Google search and we can find out more about a candidate than some of the people.
They know.
Anyway, I don't want to go down that path, but I had to throw that in there. I had to take a jab. Why not?
They something else we need to promote is on Monday we're going to have a selection special and we'll catch up with Corey Glore for our weekly visit, but we'll also talk to Coach O and Sue Murray from On Campus to the Cape, who will be in attendance for the Greenville Regional. And then also another surprise guest or two.
It's going to be a lot of fun. And this, I just have a good feeling. So you know what? If we don't get a national seed, so be it. We're Pirates. We'll handle it. But you never know. It's going to be the anticipation this year. It's going to be even greater than I think we've ever had. And I'm excited. And I know you guys are waiting with bated breath. And, again, folks, if you want to go to the viewing party, it's at Sub Dogs, 11 a.m. It's the parking lot adjacent to Sub Dogs, and the doors, quote-unquote, open at 11. You better get there before 11. I think this is going to be a huge crowd at Sub Dogs. And they won, I know, Bubba, the Barstool National Championship for bars.
Yes. Yep, top college bar in the nation, topped out Penn State.
So they've got a huge reputation. They're tremendous, and it's going to be a lot of fun. They're going to have a big screen TV, and I'm sure they're going to have a lot of fun stuff there. They do an outstanding job with hosting stuff, so we'll see how that turns out. Again, get your tickets. And, Bubba, I know we've got we have the watch party coming up. We've got a lot of other exciting announcements coming up in the month of July, right?
Yeah, we do. That's what we'll have a feature. Last year, and of course, we had the nostalgia party that took place there the final couple weeks of July. I think it was like July 20th to be exact.
Right.
But this year, we'll probably do something similar. And then we'll also have a lot of different player profiles leading up to that game day, August 31st, at Carter-Finley Stadium against the Wolfpack.
And we also have two more announcements we'll wait until next month to make, right? I said we have two more announcements we'll wait until next month to make that we actually are working on right now, and I know that they're going to be awesome.
Yep, folks will enjoy it. And, guys, now I'm down here. I'm closing in on Whiteville, home of Turner Brown.
Oh, well.
Always think about that when I pass through here. Whiteville always has such a strong baseball program, and we've gotten several players from here down through the years in addition to Turner Brown.
That, good. Bubba, you're such a honky, you probably live in Whiteville.
Wow. I'll leave it to Kyle for the great jokes, so he's the comedian of the podcast.
Yes. Anybody feel free to use that.
I'm sure they will. Do you have any final thoughts there, guys, before we...
And listeners, Kyle said the first time that he saw my profile picture on, I believe it was Facebook, he did not think I was Caucasian.
I thought you were mixed. I did. There was something about his picture on Facebook. When I first saw it, I thought he was mixed. I said, Bubba, to clarify some people are going to be like, what? But Bubba reached out to me and Dave when we started doing this podcast, thought he could help us, which he's been a huge asset. But we hadn't met him in person at that time. And so I talked to Bubba, but the first time I saw him on Facebook, I said, wait a minute, this dude sounds like the most white-bread white dude ever.
His name is Bubba.
Bubba Rosenbaum. And I was like, he looks like you're mixed. I think you're not mixed, to your knowledge. You're a regular old white dude, and yeah. So yeah. I mean, but you sure did. There was something about your profile picture. I thought you were mixed. I thought you were half Caucasian, half African American, but you're not. You're just a regular old honky. And
well,
so you know,
yeah. who's uncomfortable out there listening right now?
Well, we're white. We can say honky. All right.
I think it's funny that actually the whole thing about it was your Facebook profile. I remember, Bubba, that profile pic that the cow was in question. And I think looking at it, it looks like the way the sun was hitting your face or something.
I think it's, I think that's what it is. You look shadowed you don't look like you normally do in that picture.
Yeah, there's something
about
that.
You're much more handsome in it.
This is going from bad to worse.
Thank you. Thank you, I think.
Exactly.
All right, Bubba, before we get in more trouble, can you tell folks about stuff coming up on the podcast?
Yeah, so we've already told you a lot of the things we have headed your way, such as PJ Conley and Warren Gaspar. One that I failed to mention, one of the really nice facilities that there is in Greenville is the Next Level Training Center, and Trent Britt, so we'll catch up with him sometime next week. So look forward to that interview as well. Trent's a great Pirate and had a son that played Division I baseball at Liberty.
Yeah, I wanted to mention, too, I was speaking of Liberty, if Hugh Freeze can get a job, then, hey.
To be fair, there's a big difference between what Hugh Freeze did and what Art Riles was accused of doing.
Covering up rape versus having
consensual,
a burner phone.
That was the burner phone, because that would have been consensual, very consensual, as a matter of fact.
So, we need to get Hugh Freeze on the podcast. I think that would be fantastic.
Oh, my God, I'd love to interview Hugh Freeze.
Yeah, when he got hired up at Liberty, I definitely watched that press conference, and he's
did he win the press conference?
He's a Southern Baptist preacher.
Yeah, he's full of crap.
So what you're saying is a preacher's never done that sort of thing.
I was not implying anything negative about pastors. No, I'm just talking about his delivery and the way, and just reminds me of a pastor. That's all.
Hey, yeah, Kyle, you remember that Jimmy Swagger? He's like, I am a sinner.
He's Swagger. You remember Swagger was it Swagger that did the thing on the forehead? And he went,
No, well, I know you're talking about Benny Hinn that definitely has done that, but I don't know about.
A lot of those ridiculous 1980s TV preachers. Oh my goodness! I don't know. You talk about a work. How people fell for that crap, I don't know. Oh my goodness.
That. That's where, by the way, folks. That's where. Going back to wrestling, that's where our Bruce Pritchard got the character right,
Brother Love. Correct. It was in the midst of all these evangelical TV
Jim Baker
nonsense.
And all that
mess. Yes, and he
praise the Lord, PTO.
Yes, he decided. You know what? He came up with that character. He would do it in the car for McMahon, and McMahon was said, you know, that they should go out. That's how they should. Got to make some real money and, get into this evangelical preaching stuff and rip people off. And so that's how the character of Brother Love came to be. Yes, indeed.
I love Ray Stevens' song, Would Jesus Wear a Rolex? I love that.
Would Jesus wear a Rolex on his television show?
Yeah.
If you want to talk politics, if you want to talk faith, we're the sports show for you.
And
yeah, the
TV.
Weather objective. We've been a lot of the Netflix objective earlier, right? The streaming objective.
That was the TV reference, correct?
Yeah. So we had that, and Kyle and I love weather, so we talk about that sometimes. You never know what we're going to talk about, but that's what makes the show fun. And I know that, thanks, by the way, before we go, thank you. One of the record-breaking months we've ever had. Bubba, I want to mention that to folks. Thank you for all the listens. It's growing. We don't talk about it enough. We don't toot our horn enough. But this month we have a lot
horn
to toot about. What?
I think thank yous mean more when they're stated in threes.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you.
I toot my horn to play. We've ruined it tonight. All the
but,
we've been going up is, it's gotta
happen. Our email is thesportsobj@gmail.com. Again, thesportsobj@gmail.com. If you want to send us some hate mail, by all means do so.
And we also have Kyle from LaGrange@gmail.com. You can send all the hate mail there.
If you want to tweet us some hate, it's @thesportsobj on Twitter, and then on Instagram @thesportsobjective. Leave any negative comments there as well. And then on YouTube, you just simply search The Sports Objective and you'll be able to find us. And you can, of course, listen to our show wherever you are right now. TuneIn Radio, SoundCloud, Google Play Music, iTunes, Stitcher, you name it, you can probably find us.
You definitely will. And we had a lot of fun tonight. Thank you, gentlemen. And well, good luck to the Pirates. We'll find out more over on Monday at lunchtime at noon. Until next time, for Kyle from LaGrange Barber and Bubba Rosenbaum, I'm Dave Richmond for the Sports Objective Podcast.
I'm going to go toot my horn.
You've been listening to the Sports Objective Podcast. Join us next time as the guys will be objective, and the objective is sports.